hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Deonandia podcast. I'm Dr. Awat Deonandan, a global health epidemiologist. Today, though, we're not going to talk about global health epidemiology. We are going to talk about the shooting event that happened in Ottawa yesterday. Today is October 23rd, and yesterday on the 22nd, a gunman by the name of Michael Zehaf Bibo killed a soldier guarding the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Ottawa, and then hijacked a car, drove it to Parliament, fired some shots into Parliament, and was killed himself by a heroic constable in Centre Block. And this has created, of course, a day of chaos and fear. And what I'm going to talk about now is the environment that was created during this emergency yesterday, because I had the opportunity to walk about the area while this was happening and to record some observations. To be clear, I'm not criticizing anything or anyone. I'm just observing the tone of the place. When our story begins, I just arrived in Ottawa at about 10 a.m., a plane had landed, and I checked my Twitter feed, and a Globe and Mail reporter in Parliament had just reported on Twitter that he heard gunshots coming from Parliament. So I knew something was going down. And there's nothing of the news yet, there's nothing else happening on Facebook or Twitter or for my friends, but there were rumblings that something was going down. I turned to the gentleman next to me on the plane, and I said, I think there's something happening in Parliament, gunshots fired. And he got on his computer, and he was looking as well. It took us a while to get off the plane, but I went straight downtown. Why? Because I live about 3.5 blocks away from where all of this happened. And I felt a responsibility to go to my home and to see what's happening. And to be further clear, if at any point a peace officer had ordered me to go elsewhere, I would have complied in an instant. I'm not advocating civil disobedience. I'm not advocating any kind of anarchy. I'm just saying I was walking around and making these observations. So the first recording I'll play for you is when I first got back to my condo, dropped my bag off, and grabbed my headset and fast walked to where the shooting happened, because I wanted to see what people were doing, what the tone on the street was, whether the police were locking down the place, whether the military was arriving. And I had about half hour to do this because I had to teach a class. My international health class was about to start, and this was on the way to my class, so if I walked quickly, I can get a quick peek and then go straight to my class. At this point, I knew that the gentleman who'd been shot, Corporal Nathan Cirillo, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, had been taken away to the hospital, so I knew I was not going to see any macabre sight that I'm going to be ghoulishly exploiting and photographing, so get that out of your mind. That was not going to happen. I'm sad to report, of course, that the corporal died of his wounds, which makes this obviously a sad story. But let's begin. So the first dispatch here is about 2 minutes long. It's me walking from my condo to the shooting site and making observations as I go. I'm breathing rather heavily because I'm fast walking to get there in time so I can also get to my class and start teaching. So here we go. Okay, it's October 22nd. I'm in Ottawa right now, and as I've arrived, there was a shooting at Parliament. So I just got off the plane, and I'm walking down there right now because it is literally 4 blocks away from my home. I can see the war memorial from here, and there is a barricade of police cars around it. There was a soldier shot there this morning by what appears to be one or two disaffected young men. Please, I hope you're not brown-skinned. I hope you're not Islamic. So the last thing we need is to feed that kind of hysteria, but it seems likely that's the case. So the street's actually quite calm and deserted, and people are just strolling around lazily. I wonder how many know that there was a shooting. Up ahead, the flashing police car lights are quite visible. As I get closer, I'll try to take a couple of photographs. I hope the soldier who was shot makes it. The photos I saw on the news weren't very optimistic. Interestingly, I learned about this on Twitter. That noise you hear behind me is the wind. I can't block out all of it with this headset, but we're doing the best we can. So there are people closer to the site now who are taking photographs. What I like about this is, if there's anything to like about it, is that there is no panic. People are going about their day quite ordinarily. If you've never been to Ottawa, it's a sleepy town. It's a fake city, manufactured to be the capital. Population of about 1 million if you count the suburbs. So this sort of thing is quite rare. Just past the first armed policeman, who is questioning a gentleman who has stopped to wipe his shoes. I guess they're being diligent about most things. No one has questioned why I'm walking without a headset yet, which is good. Someone is pushing a portable solar power generator towards the site. I don't know what that's for. I assume it's not really related. Oh, there's a bunch of dogs under there, so I guess it isn't related. It's a solar-powered dog hut of some kind. As I get closer, there are actually buses pulled over, and there are cars being turned away at Wellington Street. Let me see if I can get a photograph of what's going on. Okay. Nice stop. Some interesting observations from this event. First is that the police locked down the place pretty well downtown. I guess they have a lot of experience dealing with visiting diplomats, VIPs, that had shut down the downtown core around Parliament. But also, they were stopping interesting passers-by who were doing odd things, like one older gentleman was having trouble wiping the bottom of his shoe against a brush, and a cop stopped to investigate. A bunch of homeless guys were camped out near the event with a transistor radio listening to the live news feed describing what they're seeing. One annoying middle-aged man stopped a cop who was in full body armor looking very intense and told him, "Hey, you're earning your keep today, huh?" The cop wisely ignored him. That's all. So at this point, I had made it to the university, which did not seem that affected when I arrived. There were people on the streets. Not a lot of people. I figured that many people had heard the news and had stayed home. But there are people milling about the streets. Taxi drivers, a guy selling hot dogs, there's some students walking around. And I go into my office building, intent to rush to my class, which was about to start in about 4 minutes. And I go to our admin office, hoping to see if the exams I needed for Friday had been printed. But the door was locked, and the lights were turned out. And I just figured, oh, the admin person who's supposed to be there didn't come in today. That happens sometimes in our department. And I thought, oh, that's unfortunate. But then the door opened up, a hand dragged my hand and pulled me inside. Now, apparently there was an email telling us that we're in an emergency situation that was sent out by the university. I saw the email. I didn't really read it because I'm walking. I'm fast walking from my condo to throughout all this and getting to my office. So I didn't read the details. If I had read the details, I would have known that a lockdown was in order. And I still didn't figure out the extent of the lockdown even after the exchange that I had with our admin people. But I took the time to record about 30 seconds worth of my impressions of having been pulled into that room where three or four of our admin people were huddled in the darkness, not scared, but they were just doing what they were told, staying quiet in the absolute blackness of the office. There was a small radio playing, some music, and they seemed content. But I went up to my office afterwards and was interested to find that all the doors were locked, but I was able to get in. And those are the observations I'm about to make in the following snippet. So I just got into my office to teach, and the university is in lockdown. So all the windows are blacked out. All the offices have lights turned off. And I'm trying to get into the admin office, and apparently everyone's hiding inside there. So they open the door for me, and it's a little party happening because no one can do any work. It's locked down. Interesting, this happens a good 2 hours after the actual gunfight went down. Oh, you're kidding me. They've locked me out now. Let's see if I can open this door. Hang on. So, yes, I was able to open the door and get to my class. I still didn't realize that the classrooms were locked out. I didn't really understand this lockdown idea. And I get to the classroom, and I use, you know, my technology, my card keys, to get access to the classroom, even though I'm probably not supposed to, I realize now. And there were some of my students hanging about, saying, oh, I guess we have class today. And about four of them came in. And a class of about 50 people, four came in. And I told them, like, I don't think we are supposed to have a class, but if you want to stay, we can still talk about the thing we're supposed to talk about, which was a lecture on global health and hunger. And so they agreed. And what I decided to do was to try to broadcast the lecture on YouTube. That way, the people who were clever enough not to come in, or perhaps were huddled somewhere else and bored, could dial into the YouTube channel and could watch this lecture anyway and pretend that everything was normal and go about their classroom life. And a couple of the students were eager to email their friends to let them know what was about to happen. Unfortunately, I couldn't get the campus Wi-Fi to work, and so I couldn't do a live lecture from my computer. It was so frustrating. It was a perfect example, a perfect opportunity to use technology to overcome the the barriers put in place due to extraneous circumstances. And yet, that opportunity was taken away from me. So instead, what I did, I lectured to them anyway, but I recorded an audio of that lecture, and that will be the next podcast that I upload. And it's unfortunate, it would have been better as a video lecture. And after that, of course, I left because there was another class to teach, my second-year statistics class. I understand that we're supposed to stay put. I didn't really realize that, to be honest. I didn't realize the full extent of the requirements for lockdown. And I was more concerned about if any of my second-year students showed up to stats class, would they be confused? Would they know what was going on? Again, not really realizing that the entire campus was affected. And so I wanted to make sure I got to the classroom to inform anyone who did show up that they didn't have to be there. So our stats class is in the law faculty, and I was able to get there internally. You don't have to go outside for that. And I get to my classroom, and shockingly, it's a huge auditorium. About 120 people are in this class. I get to the class, and it too is locked and blackened. So I figure, rationally, that the doors were locked before the classes started. There would be no students there. I can leave. I see another admin person standing around, someone that I know. So I go and chat with her for a bit. And I tell her, well, I guess class is over. I guess I should just go home, considering I just got off a plane. My bags are still unpacked. I haven't seen my home in 10 days. And I live literally a 7-minute walk away. And she says, no, you can't do that. There's a gang of people shooting up the neighborhood. Now, this I knew to be untrue because I've been following the news closely as I'm making these walks. At the time, it was widely thought that there were two gunmen. One had already been killed, and one they thought was on the way to Quebec, and so traffic was being stopped there. We know today that there wasn't even a second one. There was just one. But the thought of a gang of gunmen shooting up the neighborhood, that sounded very Mumbai-like, and I questioned that instantly. But what I realized was, it's amazing how quickly rumors start in situations like this, and I was not going to be part of the panic-mongering, the rumor-mongering. I was going to remain calm and not overreact to any situations of crisis. And so I rejected that supposition out of hand, and I told her, well, I'm going to go home anyway. Thank you very much. Now, I go out the front door, but there is an older woman with a security helmet on, clearly a librarian, I think, who was conscripted into the role of a security patrol person for this building, who said in French, no, you can't leave. And I was going to challenge her, because here's my thing. I understand the need for people to stay inside in crisis. I don't question the logic of that requirement, of that protocol. It's completely rational. I understand you don't want to get in the way of the police who are doing their job outside. I understand not wanting to put yourself in harm's way. I get that. However, a couple of things came to mind. One is that there are people walking around outside. I can see them through the door. There are students on the steps out there having a cigarette. There's construction guys walking around having coffee. There's a guy selling shawarmas or something walking around. This isn't a situation where there are SWAT team guys patrolling the streets with guns. It's a living, breathing street. And I felt a little irrationally imprisoned in this building as a result. And the second thought went through my mind was, by what authority are they keeping us here? I understand there's an agreement to conform to the policies and protocols of security. I understand that. I'm not suggesting that anyone challenge those protocols. Not at all. I'm just wondering about the legal authority of those who seek to keep us inside. And with those thoughts in mind, I did not challenge this person. She doesn't need me doing that. It's not her job to argue with idiots like me. Instead, I just went out the back door. This way, nobody gets into trouble. I don't cause a scene. So I go out the back door, and I start to walk home. And I was interested to see what the tone of the walk home was going to be. And at this point, it was after noon. I think it may have been 1 o'clock or so. So for a few hours now, the city was in something resembling crisis mode. There were sirens happening in the distance all the time, but there were still cars going by. This was not a ghost town. It's not a demilitarized sort of war zone, unlike the way that I think some media were representing it. And some friends were tweeting me the entire time, Ray, go inside, it's not safe. Okay, I understand that sentiment, but one of the reasons I'm making this recording is to explain to people what the streets were really like. It wasn't like that. It was just fewer people were out, that is all. So the following is the last few moments of observations I made, and that was when I walked from the campus to my house. And even though I felt perfectly safe the entire time, there was a nagging thought in the back of my mind about what if I do encounter a bad situation in the walk home? You know, when I feel like an idiot. And my biggest concern really was that I'd encounter some, you know, trigger-happy soldier types who were hunting for a gunman and mistook, you know, the brown guy with a leather jacket and a suspicious-looking headset for being perhaps an inappropriate and problematic fellow. That didn't happen. So, without further ado, here are the final few moments of the observations that I made on October 22nd. It's 1 o'clock now. The university is on lockdown. I'm going to walk home. They wouldn't let me out of the building, which is hilarious, because the streets, they're just people walking around. So, I'm not sure how they manage or expected to enforce that lockdown. Still, it's a fascinating response, and I don't blame them. It's probably the right response, but it's a slight overreaction. The latest news reports are that a SWAT team has ascended on downtown Ottawa, and perhaps one of the gunmen has hijacked a car and tried to escape. There are sirens going around all around me, but otherwise, it's actually pretty peaceful. I went to teach my international health class, and 4 students actually showed up. So I opted to try to broadcast the lecture on YouTube. However, the university Wi-Fi system wouldn't connect. So instead, I recorded an audio lecture with 4 live students, and I will stream that later. And then I went to my statistics class, my second year stats class, because I was concerned that they're much younger and they probably don't know what to do, and some would probably show up. But when I went there, the previous classes were still huddled in that classroom in the dark under lockdown conditions. Apparently the protocol is you turn off the lights and you hide. That makes sense if there's a gunman around. But to be clear, there are, last I heard, 2 gunmen in Parliament, which is like a kilometer away. So, but I guess they're being safe. But when you look on campus, I don't see any security here. I see a lot of construction workers smoking cigarettes. I see a guy selling hot dogs. I see a couple of old women walking around chatting. It doesn't really look like a lockdown scenario. It looks more like a campus on reading break. Fascinating. Anyway, I decided to leave. I'm walking home. If you don't hear back from me, it means that police mistook me for a gunman and I've been shot. Otherwise, talk to you later. Well, there you have it, my observations from the crisis day in Ottawa of October 22nd, 2014. Sorry if you expected anything more profound. I'm not an on-the-spot journalist. I'm just some schmuck with a recorder. But some final observations, if I may. First is, do not mistake my frivolity in any way for disrespect for what was happening. I understand a man was shot. This is a tragic thing. It's a sad thing. And we should not make light of it. I understand that the individuals in Parliament were all at mortal risk, and I mean no disrespect to any of them whatsoever. Some people have misinterpreted some of my words as being somewhat flippant and frivolous and dismissive of the integrity, the safety of certain leaders. That is not intended at all. I'm quite glad everybody's safe. I wish ill upon no one, and I mean that genuinely. The next observation is that even though I somewhat skirted the lockdown requirements of my university, I want to point out that I was not aware that we were in lockdown until well into it. And even so, I do wonder about the way in which the campus security integrates with the actual security of the city and the province and the nation. I've been told by a friend in another university that in some parts of the continent, campus security are actually state security. And that makes sense to me, to have actual policemen be the security individuals on campus. Then they have the legal authority to order someone to, say, sequester it, and I would have no problem following the direct orders of a policeman in that manner. And I'm quite pleased with the way the city responded to this event. Everyone was calm. Nobody panicked. There was no shouting. There was no noise about it. Nobody was giving anybody a hard time. I really like the fact that the homeless folks were left unmolested by security. I remember, you know, one of the most important observations I made when I walked to the site of the shooting was these clusters of homeless men just hanging around with the transistor radios, watching the reporters do their jobs and listening in. Right, and nobody was harassing them, which was nice to see. And I do wonder in other parts of the world if that would have been the case. So I am proud of the city of Ottawa that we responded calmly and did not overreact. And I would like to see that the nation follow suit, by which I mean I don't know if this was a terrorist act. It may have been. It may not have been. It may have been a political motivated action. It may have just been a crazed gunman. There's a strong distinction to be made between those two events. And so let us not inch towards the security state that the United States has become. One of the nice things about living in Ottawa is that Parliament is accessible to the people. You can walk up to the hill and just hang out at all hours of the day, take a stroll at midnight around the back, and just look over the river. It's quite lovely. I've done it many times. You can go into Center Block and walk about. You got to pass through the metal detectors, of course. You don't have to make an appointment like you do at the White House and things like that. And I'd hate to see that be diminished because of this one episode. So that's all I have to say, really, is that in Ottawa we had a particularly newsworthy and sad event. And let us see how it unfolds in the coming weeks. What's really quite fascinating is to see how it'll be played on the upcoming federal elections. And I fully expect some, how should we put this? I fully expect some individuals of less than supreme honor to take advantage of this event to play up some hard law and order platform. I hope that's not the case. Until next time, this is Ray Dunedin.